does it now? Who's next? What are we doing, anyway?
It's the inquest, sir. Doctor's just given his report.
That's it. I didn't hear him. Mumbles. Everybody mumbles, he says. What is it about?
About Mrs. Palgrove, sir. It's on the papers in front of you.
Right. What's he hanging about for, then? Why doesn't he go away?
Well, Inspector Pirbright wants to ask him a few questions, sir.
Well, why doesn't he get on with it, then? I haven't got all day.
Dr. Ferguson, would everything you have found be consistent with this woman's having been held forcibly by her ankles? Held upside down, that is.
Yes. Rather in the way one tips up a wheelbarrow to empty it.
Is Dr. Ferguson here as a medical witness or as a gardening expert?
I see no harm in offering an illustration in language that people can understand. But of course I'm not a member of the legal profession.
Thank you, Doctor.
The doctor's fee, sir?
Money for old rope. I should have been a doctor instead of a coroner here. Well, what now?
Now you adjourn, sir. Here, I've written it down for you.
I now adjourn this inquiry sine die to enable the police to make further investigations.
Come along now, sir. I'll get you home. You said you wanted some sausages on the way back, sir. I'll stop at Spain's. Come along with me now.
What? Yes, sausages, yes.
Good day to you, Mr. Amblesbury.
Is it? I don't think it is. Who is that fellow, anyway?
That's the Chief Constable, sir. Come along now.
I do believe he gets even worse.
You think so, sir?
Well, don't you, Mr. Pirbright? You see more of him than I do.
Sergeant Malley says he's a wonderful old gentleman for his age.
Does he indeed? Well, I must say, I admire the way Sergeant Malley seems to manage him.
Oh, like a mother, sir. I don't know what had happened to poor old Mr. Amblesby if it weren't for the sergeant.
Well, now then, Mr. Pirbright, what have you got to tell me about this unfortunate lady from Brompton Gardens?
Well, sir, at the moment, everything points to the husband. He's given a hopelessly unsatisfactory account of himself. Two accounts, in fact. One disproved, and the other unlikely. There's not much material evidence, but that wasn't to be expected anyway. What there is, he can't even begin to explain. His cigarette case in the water under the body, for instance, and those letters Mrs. Palgrove sent to you and other people saying she was afraid of being murdered by a loved one. Well, there's no doubt at all that she wrote them.
Where does he say he was at the time when his wife was drowned?
At first, he said he'd been to Leicester that night and had slept in his car after stopping on the road home. Unluckily for him, the car had just been serviced, and the mileage record on the service log made nonsense of his story. He didn't even try to bluster it out. He changed it altogether.
Do you believe the second story?
I accept it, because it cannot be disproved, sir. Not on what evidence we have. And if he's still lying, the odd thing about this second tale is that it does him no good at all.
I don't follow you.
Well, the Palgroves bought themselves a cottage a couple of years ago, you see, sir. It's a few miles along the Brockleston Road at Hamborne Dyke. What Palgrove now says is that he stayed in that cottage during the whole of the night of his wife's death.
And what reason did he give for that?
He said he needed to be on his own occasionally.
Well, he does sound reasonable, you know, Mr. Pirbright. I mean, I am devoted to my own wife. But there are times when the world is...
Yeah, on the face of it, yes. So why the tale about going to Leicester? Which, incidentally, he'd told in advance to his secretary at the factory.
Well, I think that's easily enough explained. It was the excuse he'd prepared for his wife. No woman likes to think her husband is spending a night away from home simply because he wants a rest from her.
Oh, I see, sir. I'm afraid that wouldn't have occurred to me.
Yes. Well,
there is something else I ought to mention. The suggestion is strong that Palgrove has for some time been having an affair with a married woman.
Oh, gracious.
This would be a much more cogent reason for his going to the cottage than a sudden desire for solitude. He doesn't strike me as the contemplative type.
Do you know who the woman is?
Not yet, sir. But I expect you shortly. Sergeant Love is very resourceful in these matters.
I suppose you can't afford to be over squeamish in a case like this.
No, sir, you can't.
It seems such a pity that these people spoil things for themselves, and for others too, of course. What do you propose to ask the lady when you find her, or when Sergeant Love finds her, rather?
The situation will be somewhat delicate.
Oh, it will indeed.
No, sir, I didn't mean in a moral sense. Delicate in a criminal sense. You see, Palgrove may be denying the existence of a mistress, as he persisted in doing yesterday, by the way, not because he simply wants to protect her reputation, but because she was an accomplice in the murder of his wife.
Oh, my goodness, oh, gracious me.
Yes, indeed, sir. You remember, of course, what Mrs. Palgrove wrote in her letter.
Yes. Something about a plot, a plan.
Precisely, sir. Yeah. I have heard the plan discussed. If murder was being proposed, as she very plainly stated, who else but the mistress would be the second party to the conversation? It may very well be that Palgrove was, as he says, at the cottage that night. The woman, too. But he needed only to make a 10-minute car trip to kill his wife. He could have been back again in half an hour. And we needn't expect the mistress to do other than swear that Palgrove never left the cottage at all.
Yes, I see how difficult the situation might prove. Well, have you any other lines of inquiry in mind, Inspector?
Yes, but I entertain no great hopes of them.
Sorry to hear that. Still, nil desperandum. I'm sure that something will emerge sooner or later to repay all your trouble.
There was one thing Palgrove said that I'm inclined to believe.
Yeah?
He claimed that somebody had been following him about a good deal lately, a stranger.
Doesn't that sound a little fanciful?
Well, that's what I thought at first, but he described the man in some detail, and I think I know who he is.
Not a local man, you say?
No, sir, a Londoner.
Ah, a Londoner.
A man who follows, or followed once. A somewhat odd profession.
You intrigue me, Inspector Pirbright.
Mr. Hive is an intriguing character. I happen...
Hive? Is that his name?
Yes, sir, Mortimer Hive. As I was saying, I happened to see him yesterday morning. He was going into the office of those Charity Alliance people in St. Anne's Gate. And it was to them, by a curious coincidence, that Mrs. Palgrove had sent the day before a remarkably acrimonious letter.
Oh, gracious.
So, I think I shall try and chase Mr. Hive up and see what he can tell us. Don't you agree, sir?
Well, Dayton, on balance, I... Yes, oh, yes.
Another lovely morning.
Morty. Come back to bed.
Oh, in a moment, dear heart.
Whatever are you doing now?
Exercising, my dear. Must keep in shape.
You're in lovely shape, Morty.
Oh.
For a man of your age.
Oh.
Morty.
My love.
These women with titles you were telling me about... Did they wear nighties or pyjamas?
I think you may take it that night dresses are favoured by the aristocracy, as rule. The exception I always remember was a Lady Beryl, somebody or other, from Winchester Way. We managed to scrape her in at the end of the 1947 season, and she, believe it or not, insisted on going to bed in a polo jersey.
I'll bet that tickled.
Every profession has its little irritations, even that of professional correspondent. I've been very lucky. There's only one thing I always was particular about. I wouldn't take a client while she had a cold.
Oh, what, like dentists won't?
It may sound rather trivial prejudice, but I think I owe my very good health to it.
Jewels. Did they wear lots of jewels, Morty?
I have awakened in the night, dear girl, with enough emeralds up my nose to pay the entire hotel staff double wages for a year.
Oh, you're very... dashing, Morty.
Oh.
Very... What's the word? Debonair?
Yeah.
I'll bet you're a wonderful private detective.
Oh, do my best.
This case of yours, is it to do with that woman who was murdered in Brompton Gardens? That one that was drowned in a well?
I had no idea that any woman had been drowned in a well. I'm very sorry to hear it. Yes, even if it had, professional etiquette forbids me to discuss my cases with anyone, even my very dearest.
Oh, I wish he didn't have to go back to London, Morty.
Ah, duty calls, dear Helen.
Oh, Morty.
Hmm?
Do come back to bed. I'm feeling ever so lonely. Oh, come back now before you tire yourself out.
Coming, my love. Ah, am I by happy fortune speaking to Dover? Dover, Hythe, or rather Hastings, here.
I thought you were going back to London.
The gentleman at the shop says that you have not yet collected my account. Now, I need to...
I said I thought you were going back to London.
Ah, but events have conspired, very pleasantly conspired, I may say, to delay my passage. That is what
I'm not interested in your private odysseys. I employed you to do a specific job, and that job is now finished. I did not employ you to pester and embarrass me. Is that clear?
Mais oui, mon capitaine, you are absolutely right. I say, isn't it rather nice to be talking without all those trade terms? No wonder most detectives are bad conversationalists.
Are you leaving today?
I was just going to say that this good fellow at the shop...
I said, are you leaving today? Well, are you returning to London today?
I rather doubt it, actually. Events have conspired...
When are you going?
All too soon, I fear.
Tomorrow?
And tomorrow, and tomorrow.
I want a straight answer. And I don't advise you to waste any more of my time.
No, quite. How can I best reply to your esteemed inquiry? Perhaps I should say that I have acquired commitments. Non-professional, let it be understood, amigo mio. And in no sense undesirable. But as I say, this good fellow at the shop tells me that my account, plainly wrapped, service en dire, is uncollected, therefore undischarged. I do not complain, rather do I respectfully petition. You catch, perhaps, my drift?
I want your money at once, on the nail, like a cat's meat man or something.
Cat's meat, man. I'm afraid that illusion defeats me. Sauce for ganders, I would have thought was the commodity in question.
£12, on account. I can leave £12 for you at the shop at about 4:15, not before.
Guineas?
Oh, very well. Guineas.
That would be a most welcome accommodation, really would.
In return, I want a definite undertaking from you.
Yours ever to serve, mon général.
I shall leave you that money on the condition that you get out of Flaxborough tomorrow. The rest I'll post on for you, but you are to be away from this town tomorrow. Is that clearly understood?
Where?
I said, is that understood?
I understand what you want, yes, but I really cannot see why I should...
Do you want this money, or don't you?
Oh, I certainly do. Making a good impression on the fair sex is considerably more expensive at my age. Time was when the lady paid for candlelit dinners.
The hell with your candlelit dinners. You'll be on your way back to London in the morning.
That is my inalienable intention.
Then don't let me hear from you again.
Miss Tea Time.
Why, Inspector, how very nice to see you.
I'm told you're liable to be swooped upon by some committee or other.
I am indeed. But who told you that?
I called at your office at the Charities Alliance, the lady there.
Ah, yes, that would be Miss Joyner, I expect. Built like a beanpole, rimless spectacles and a hat like a field helmet.
A very fair description. She told me that it was your day on at the hall here, and that I should hie me hither in great haste if I wished a word with you before the Hobbies and Needlework Subcommittee descended upon you.
Very baroque turn of phrase, Miss Joyner, but accurate.
So, I'll be very policeman-like and come straight to the point.
By all means. You don't mind if I sew Teddy's ear on while we talk?
I beg your pardon?
Teddy's ear. This bear, as you can see, he's earless.
Oh, not at all. Now, perhaps you've heard already of the death of Mrs. Henrietta Palgrove. She was drowned the night before last in an ornamental well in the garden of her home.
I did know, yes. A shocking affair. It's been quite widely discussed, of course.
I imagine so. She'd be well known among social workers, committee members, people like that?
Oh, certainly. She was an exceptionally active lady, was Mrs. Palgrove.
It might be argued that active people are more liable to make enemies than the passive ones. Or would it be wildly unreasonable to expect this to apply in the field of good works?
I think you know as well as I do, Inspector, that there is no more fertile soil for the burgeoning of homicide than among the willfully charitable.
You shock me, Miss Teatime.
Oh, no, I do not. You would not be here now if your thoughts had not been following the same line.
You mustn't make too much of this. The person who killed Mrs. Palgrove is very clearly indicated by the evidence. I've no doubt that that person will be arrested and charged quite soon, but every other possibility must be examined thoroughly in the meantime.
And am I one of the other possibilities, Inspector?
You received a letter yesterday from Mrs. Palgrove.
That is correct. Have you read it? No. Oh, yes, of course you must have done. I suppose a copy was in what I believe are called the effects of the deceased.
It was a very threatening letter, Miss Teatime.
I can see that you're not accustomed to handling the correspondence of charitable societies, Mr. Burbright. If one took seriously every hint of nefarious goings-on, one would have no time left for the collection of funds. And what would our animals do then, poor things?
There is no truth, I take it, in the suggestion that there has been misappropriation of funds.
None, of course. It is misapprehension, not misappropriation, that bedevils the work of charities. People do not realize how high is the cost of administration nowadays. My goodness, Inspector, there's a great deal more to it than waving a collecting box. Which reminds me, any loose change you have on you will do. Oh. I find one accumulates so much of it these days, don't you? That walking becomes rather difficult.
Yeah, of course.
Just my little charge for allowing you to interview me.
There.
Oh.
There.
Thank you.
Purely as a formality, Miss Teatime, you do understand that. Could you just tell me where you were on the night of the 12th? The night before last, that is. From 10 o'clock onwards, eh?
In bed, Inspector. Where else?
It clearly would be impertinent of me to ask if there is anyone of whom I might seek corroboration of that.
Not in the least. I should take it as a compliment. But no, I've left things rather late. To tell the truth, it's regarding the physical side of marriage that I've always been apprehensive.
Ah.
There so seldom seems to be enough of it. Oh, dear me, is that the time? I fear that the committee will be bearing down at any moment. Is there any other matter in which I may try and help you, Inspector?
Miss Teatime, do you happen to be acquainted with a man called Hive?
Mortimer? Well, fancy your knowing Mortimer Hive. Oh, yes, we are old friends.
What does he do, precisely?
As a matter of fact, he's in your own line of business, Inspector. Mr. Hive is a detective. A private detective, of course. Not on the panel, so to speak.
He doesn't look much like a detective.
Oh, well, he wasn't brought up to it, you know. But he had a very distinguished career in what I suppose is an allied calling. He was, until fairly recently, a groundsman.
Groundsman?
A little joke of his, Inspector. Mr. Hive was a professional correspondent. He provided grounds for divorce, you know.
Ah.
Of course, you will not let this go any further.
Why? Is it a secret?
Oh, no, not at all. But Mortimer's at that age when men tend to be a little vain and a little touchy about their physique.
Oh.
His close friends are well aware that he retired from business for reasons of health, if you follow me. But I suspect he would feel hurt if the facts were made generally known.
Do you know why he's here in Flaxborough?
That is a question which I think you should address to him in person, Mr. Burbright. The most I can properly say is that his engagement is connected, as you might imagine, with the infidelity of one of our fellow citizens.
Oh.
Incidentally, I believe the Count, as Mortimer would call him, has now terminated it. The engagement, I mean, not the infidelity. Although perhaps that has lapsed as well.
Can you suggest why Mr. Hive has been keeping the husband of Mrs. Palgrove under observation?
Now, Inspector?
Not even in the strictest confidence?
I really cannot tell you anything more.
Tell me, this collecting box, what are the objects of the New World Pony Rescue Campaign?
Ah, well, perhaps I might describe them as almost missionary in character. Animal aid work is something that knows no frontiers. And, as you will know, in America, The horse is man's helpmate on a far greater scale than in a little, highly mechanized country like England.
Really?
Oh, yes. Have you not visited America, Mr. Purvis?
I'm afraid not.
Ah, then you will not be familiar with the plight of our equine friends in such cities as San Francisco. The tram cars, you know, and those cruelly steep hills.
But surely they are cable cars in San Francisco.
And what, pray, did you suppose was down there under the road pulling the cable inspector? Oh, yes, there is much yet to be put right by the NWPRC.
It is a registered charity, I suppose. I wonder if you'd mind showing me.
Here come those tiresome committee people. I shall have to go and meet them.
Just a moment, Miss Deetown. Your friend, Mr. Hyde.
You shall meet him, Inspector, this very day. Come to tea. Can you make it convenient to be at my office at 4:45?
I think so.
Then I shall say au revoir till then. Dear Inspector Purbright. In here, ladies. And what's the name of the key of the hall cupboard? Please open it up so that I can take an inventory after the meeting.
I found that totty for you.
You sound like a procurer, Sid. What are you talking about?
That totty that Pally Palgrove's been running. He said to find out her name.
Well?
Doreen Booker. That's who it is. 25 Jubilee Park Crescent.
Booker?
She was one of the Anderson girls from Harlow Place before she got married. Used to go around with Moggs Cooper till he piled up that bike of his. You remember? Three Ponds Corner?
Oh.
They reckon Stan Biggerdyke over at Charlesbury got her in pod at one time. But a dash of that's right. Anyway, she ended up with that bloke Booker at the grammar school. She's supposed to be still pretty warm in the withers, if you get my meaning. Not that I'd know about that, of course.
Mr. Palgrove would, I presume.
Oh, so I'm told.
Right, Sid. Thanks very much. 25, you said?
Jubilee Park Crescent, yes. Flaxborough 4175.
I must say, Sid, your sources of information are never lacking in detail.
Well, things get around in this town, you know, Gov. They get around.
Well, don't I know it? I only hope you're right. I'm going to look every kind of a fool if I call her in and you're not.
No, it's right enough. Just you ask her how she likes love in a cottage.
A cottage at Hamborne Dyke?
You knew all the time, then.
Things get around in this town, you know, Sid. They get around.
No,
actually, it was Palgrove himself who told me about having a place at Hamborne when I saw him that second time. He didn't say anything about your friend Doreen, though.
Well, he wouldn't, would he?
Oh, get that, would you, Sid?
Hello?
Flaxborough CID?
Yes.
Detective Sergeant Gallion here. CID, Nottingham.
Uh-huh.
It's about this murder of yours.
Hang on.
Who is it?
CID in Nottingham. About this murder.
Which one?
Which one? How many have we got?
You must let them know that we're just as sophisticated in Flaxborough as they are in Nottingham.
Which one?
Mrs. Palgrove, is it?
Ah, that's one of the ones that Inspector Purbright's dealing with.
Oh.
I'll put you through to him now. Hey, Yakov.
Purbright?
Ah, Inspector, I realise you're a very busy man, but it's got to do with that Mrs. Henrietta Palgrove?
Oh, yes, yes. Just getting the file. Right, well.
We have some information that you might find useful, sir. The superintendent said I was to telephone you in case you'd like it followed up.
Well, that's very good of you.
A chap called Jobling came in this morning, you see. He's a partner in a photographic firm here in the city. They sell cameras and equipment and do printing and developing as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Jobling said that 2 weeks ago somebody had come into the shop and ordered some copies of two positive prints. 21 of one and 3 of the other. That was on Saturday, the 2nd of this month.
Yes.
Well, exactly a week later, last Saturday, the 9th, the chap called back to collect his order. Now, it seems there'd been some sort of slip-up in the processing department. The batch of 21 copies had been done all right, but somebody had mislaid the other photograph, the one from which 3 prints were supposed to have been run off. Jobling said the chap was fearfully annoyed, but...
What was the customer's name?
Oh, half a minute. Yes, Dover. D-O-V-E-R.
Uh-huh. Address?
18 Station Road, Flaxborough.
Right.
Anyway, he took what they'd done and told the girl that if the other picture turned up, the copies were to be sent off to him immediately by post. It did turn up, but not until yesterday afternoon. A small studio portrait that looked as if it had been taken out of a frame. It was handed over straight away to one of the process men, and he recognised it as being the same as a picture he'd just seen in an early edition of the Evening Post that carried the Polgrove inquest story.
I see.
Well, the chap told Mr. Jobling, and as I say, he came in today and passed the facts on to us. We've got the photograph, too.
And what do you think of its resemblance to the newspaper picture?
Oh, there's no doubt it's the same woman, sir. We've checked already with the original at the Post.
Is it too much to hope that somebody knows the identity of the person who was thought worthy of being duplicated 21 times?
The superintendent did ask, I believe, sir. Jobling didn't know anything beyond what he'd come in to tell us. And he said that with these copying jobs, they don't keep records as they do with the studio work.
I'm very grateful to you, Sergeant Gallion. My Sergeant Love will be in Nottingham before nightfall.
Well, if he wants any help from us, sir, he's only to ask.
Thanks again. Goodbye now. Right. Sid?
Yes?
You'd better get the next train. You might just catch these photographic people before they shut up shop.
What photographic people? Where?
I'll write it down for you. Now, two things in particular I want you to do. Try and find out if the counter girl is certain that this Dover person is a man and couldn't have been Mrs. P, as I, for one, would have assumed. And see if anyone can remember anything at all about the second photograph, the one they made 21 copies of.
Right.
I think we might be about to find out the connection between that mysterious letter and the murder of Mrs. Palgrove.
Charity Ends at Home by Colin Watson was dramatised by Christopher Dennis. John Rowe played Inspector Purbright, Paul Downing, Love, Geoffrey Banks, Mortimer, and Anne Rye, Lucy. Russell Dixon was Dover, Catherine Hunt, Helen, Graham Roberts, Chubb, and Robin Polly, Mally. The director in Manchester was Tony Cliff.